I titled this session Stewardship because we need to understand it from that lens. The uniqueness of who you both are in the marriage is an opportunity to disagree and differ in how you want to handle the money, your stuff, your time, your relationships, and often is the cause of a lot of conflict. And so how do we navigate that? And so today's this hour session awakens the list of things we commonly struggle with: money, time management, hobbies, relationships, parenting, habits. Our base to tackle this area is this understanding of stewardship, okay? The definition for stewardship looks like this. We're entrusted to be faithful managers of God's provisions and purposes. Everything in our lives, our giftedness, our financial resources, our time, our relationships, are all from God and are to be entrusted to us to give him glory and to grow his kingdom. 1 Corinthians 6, 19 through 20 says, "You do not belong to yourself. God has bought you with a high price. So honor him with your body." Our stuff, our relationship, our skills are not ours. They're a provision of God. He owns it all. You and I are entrusted to manage it for his glory. If you don't see that way and it's yours, it's your precious, my precious, then you'll be a nightmare to live with, because you'll be so fixated on the way you want it to be. You'll have an over cling to that thing or that area that you won't, number one, navigate it in oneness well, and you'll miss the opportunity to see that this life is temporary, the things that are in our lives are fleeting, and are we seeing the eternal picture before us of managing these things for God's glory? 2 Corinthians 5:21, God made Christ, who never sinned, to be the offering for our sins so that we could be made right with God through Christ. Jesus dies for us, puts his perfection on me, takes my sin upon him so that God would be glorified. The gospel is not God blessing us so that we can be glorified. Romans 11:36, from him and through him and to him are all things, to him be the glory. We have to see it's all from him. 1 Chronicles 29:14, everything comes from you. We have only given you what comes from your hand. That's a right understanding of even the things that we have are his ultimately. Am I being a good steward of those things? My money is Jesus' money. My time is his time. My days are his days. My body is his body. And when we begin to get that, we start to understand the undeniable privilege it is to steward these things for him. Stewardship is about our response to the gospel. Stewardship is our privileged opportunity to be faithful managers of God's stuff to be used for God's glory. I love David's heart in 1 Chronicles 29. He's dedicating the temple and recognizing what this moment is. He says, "Oh, our God, we thank you and praise your glorious name." He says, "But who am I and who are my people that we could give anything to you? Everything we have has come from you, and we give you only what you have already given us. We are here only for a moment, visitors and strangers in this land, as our ancestors were before us. Our days on earth are like a shadow, gone so soon without a trace. Oh Lord, our God, even these materials that we have gathered to build a temple to honor your holy name, they come from you. It all belongs to you. I know, my God, that you examine our hearts and rejoice when you find integrity there. You know I have done all this with good motives. I have watched your people offer their gifts willingly and joyously." My hope for this session is that you begin to get a better perspective on the things that we wield every day, because your overgrip on them, your misstewardship of them, will immediately put you in a whole category of mismanagement. We have to start here before we really consider how to interact with them rightly. One of my favorite pastors to listen to from afar, he's a pastor down in Texas, Matt Chandler. worth listening to his sermons online, great communicator of the gospel, had a moment in his life where his daughter was choking on an apple. She had taken a big round bite of an apple and it had lodged in her throat. She was literally turning blue in his arms and dying. In order to fight back the temptation to curse God over the concept of losing his daughter, the words he kept screaming out were, "She's yours, not mine. She's yours, not mine. She's yours, not mine. She's yours, not mine." To make sure that he honored God and recognized that at the end of the day, even his precious daughter, who God had entrusted to him, is God's. And if he has an overcling to her and removes that from who it truly belongs to, then he's in trouble as far as how he navigates life in these things. If you treat your money that way, your spouse that way, your kids that way, your stuff that way, your time that way, you're already going down the wrong channel. Very sobering reality for us. If you don't know, maybe have followed the happenings in Tennessee, a little young 2-year-old boy, Noah Chamberlain, who got lost last Thursday, a week ago Thursday, in the woods out on a walk with grandma. The father is one of the chaplains in the motorcycle club that is an understudy of mine, a good friend. I was with him just 3 weeks ago with the whole family. And he's missing, two and a half year old out in the woods. Hours turned into days. Little 2.5-year-olds don't survive 19 degree nights in the middle of a Tennessee forest. It turned into a week. We have to have this understanding that at the end of the day, what God's doing in the eternal picture, that God's on the throne and sovereign, is the only way a father endures and works through the loss of his 2-year-old baby boy. They did find his body a week later, finally, after thousands of searchers looking. Had a great conversation with him yesterday. Continue to pray for them. Without this understanding that it's ultimately the Lord's and he is king and on the throne, the loss of a child, the mismanagement of money, the things that are in our lives, these things will wreck us. They will undo you because they're fleeting, because we're not promised tomorrow, because jobs can be lost and cancer can come into bodies and cars can be stolen or wrecked. Week before Christmas, my house was broken into. We came home from a Thursday night and it had been ransacked. That sinking feeling, someone's been in your most intimate stuff. Took our nicest things, our Apple computers, our jewelry. We just had done family devotions 3 days before with the kids. And my question to the kids for family devotions that day was, name your three favorite things that we own. And then we talked about what would it look like to lose those or to have them stolen or for them to break. And the purpose of that study together was to help kids constantly see that Jesus is better than our nicest stuff. Where are our affections really sitting? And help them understand how fleeting the things of this world are, that we don't build our lives on them. And then 3 days later, we get a very physical, actual illustration of that happening. Not one of my kids went to bed that night in tears. They shared a bed together because someone had been in our house that's not supposed to. But, okay, Dad, you've taught us that this can happen, and it did happen. And we love God and will endure. So your view of what this stuff means to you, even your own spouse, you are more likely to deny God and worship and have an idol in your life that's not something on an altar or something else, but is your spouse. That they've become so much of everything to you, if you lost them, you would be undone. Your kids are very close to that as well. So we have to have a right mindset of understanding stewardship. This is God's stuff that we're entrusted to manage rightly, so are we being good stewards of it? And that right grip on these things will help you then to make the needed decisions to handle these things well and to let this be an area where you thrive in oneness and don't constantly come at each other because you have an over grip on what these things are. time management is a big part of this whole arena. I don't have time to get into it today. I will recommend a book that in the early chapters of it are very formative and helpful. Franklin Covey's one of the biggest time management systems out there in the business world, and the principles are taught in their first released book years and years ago called 10 Laws of Successful Time and Life Management. I'm not endorsing the author or even the principles in the back of the book. The first four or five chapters about time management, and the principles taught there have been life-changing for me. I've taught them to many other people. I've watched slothful, lazy, young interns and friends of mine who had no idea how to manage their days take on these practices and are just different people now because of the principles learned. We have to manage our time, or it manages us. Are you scheduling and planning and prioritizing what you're doing, or are you just letting life dictate what you do next? That's a part of stewardship and a part of being a blessing within your marriage, to be responsible for how you're managing your time. So I'm going to leave that one there. I want to focus tonight on our stuff, mainly money and things, relationships, and then skills. So let's dig into stuff for a moment. I want you to see the importance of budgeting. I'm not going to ask you to raise hands of how many of you actually have a financial budget and work it, because the sad reality is probably three of you are going to raise your hand. I've been doing this for 15 plus years, and I've been blown away at how few people, even in adulthood, don't really budget. I mean, real budgeting. And we'll see what that looks like here in a second. But that is how you manage your money instead of letting it kind of manage you. And without budgeting, it's hard to have oneness and agreement and good communication about your money unless you have worked on this at this level and come up with a plan. So in your packet on the next page, you're going to see a demo budget that I'm giving you. And this will be a great exercise for you to take home and hopefully be a great blessing to you. I've loved how many families have done this and go, wow, our whole way we do life as a family is different and new because we've adopted this practice of budgeting. The goal with budgeting is to put your income at the top and to plan and prioritize how your money is spent. With the goal, a true budget ends with a zero at the end. You don't end with that slush fund, extra $500 that you don't know where to put it. That's not managing that part of your money. That's unmanaging it. A true budget works to a zero. You have decided in an organized, prioritized way how you're going to steward your money. I'll give you a tip ahead of time in this. The reason why you don't practice budgeting is probably because of two things. Number one is laziness. I'll say three things. Number two is because you never were taught how to do it. There was no classes in high school how to write a check and manage our money and do all that. And a lot of our parents didn't teach us that growing up. So we've kind of been left to figure it out in adulthood. Number three is because you feel more wealthy when you don't predetermine how to spend your money. So you get your paycheck, you put your money in the bank account, and then you just start living. And you like the view of the big dollar amount in the bank account. Whereas if I categorize all that money down into its categories and I end up with a zero, I promise you, this is real, you will feel poor. I've had couples come back and say, Josh, I'm doing this. I feel totally poor now. And I tell them, that's why you avoided this practice. Because you like the feeling of having more money, even though you completely have no plan for when the tires go bad on the car and you're constantly going into debt because there's no real management of the money you make. Are we being good stewards of the money? And is this budgeting is a way for you to come together in your marriage and have some agreement? Let's run through this demo budget real quick. Starts with income, starting by figuring out what you both bring in to the family. I really strongly encourage you not to run separate bank accounts. It is a way you do together and not oneness. Money you make is family money. Okay? many of you who one of you works and the other person doesn't, the person who works doesn't get to have a bigger say in how to spend the money, thinking like an individual because you're the one who earned it. No, you agreed to do life together. What's mine is yours, what's yours is mine. If you're the one assigned to make the dollars and the other person has other responsibilities in the marriage, that's family money. It's family money. It's marriages where I've seen you completely keep your money separate, at the end has a weird agreement to it that's not trusting to go all into the middle. Now, we'll get back to where you have some individual money later in the budget, but I encourage you, his income, her income, maybe other income. Maybe you have a Beanie Baby online eBay business that you both do, and you sell those and you make a profit. Okay, that's income. So his income, her income, other income. Special income is maybe that bonus you got at the end of the year or the end of the month. Whatever. It's not other income. It's not a regular income source. It's other. Aunt Susie passed away and left you some money. That would be special. Still got to go into the budget. Still got to be seen as income, and it still needs to be stewarded. The first category that you need to deal with your income as far as going to spend it, according to the scriptures, is dealing with your first fruits. The scriptures teach us the biblical practice of first fruits giving. God calls for his people to give to him their first fruits, which simply means back in the day when you grew your crop, you showed that God was your God by giving of the first fruits of the crop to him in the work of the kingdom before then you decided what kind of lifestyle you were going to live. Your first fruits giving needs to be decided first, because if you put it in the back, you will you'll play shell games with your honoring God with your money. The scriptures teach about having an open-handedness in this life, especially when you're saved by Jesus Christ and you know that this is not our home. You start to steward your stuff in a different way, because building this kingdom is not your end like it is for those who don't have Jesus. And this is all they'll ever know. So what they're building in the here and now is all they've got. No, our eternal glorious future is with God in his kingdom. So now it allows me to be more open-handed with what I earn and have in this time for his purposes. The scriptures teach in 2 Corinthians 9:7, each man should give whatever he has decided in his heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. The Greek word for the word cheerful there is hilaron. It's where we get our word hilarious. God loves a hilarious giver. That's the measure of joy he wants us to have in this practice. If we acknowledge that everything I have is from him, then I'm compelled to give of my first fruits. Why? Because even though I worked hard to labor for it, my ability to work, my ability to think, that job I have, I acknowledge that it's all by God's grace that I have and can do those things. And so I start by saying, God, I want to honor you as God first and foremost in my life. And I want to joyfully give you that, not because I'm required to or under compulsion. There is a disciplined practice in my giving, in my first fruits giving. Our giving needs to look to be generous. I love the testimony in 2 Corinthians 8, 2-3. They have been going through much trouble and hard times. Their wonderful joy and deep poverty, that's a unique and there. They had great joy and deep poverty, had overflowed into rich generosity. Only in Jesus are you joyful and poor and still generous. For I can testify that they have given not only what they could, but much more. And they did it out of their own free will. There's a joyful desire to say, God, I acknowledge this income is from you. So the first decision we're going to make as a couple is, what is that amount we're going to commit to giving to the local church that we're eating from that table? Your giving base needs to go to your local church. Why? Because that's the table you eat from. To eat from that table and be blessed by the ministries that happen there, and then to do your main and first giving to something else, is to really rob the house you live in. God's instruction is to give that first base through your home church. And that then there should be an extra amount of giving. The next line says additional giving. Are there other ministries or organizations or missionaries or projects that you support? I would argue, and we probably would agree pretty quickly, if you're regularly living beyond your means, so you're spending money that's not yours to live in regular debt spending, that would be sin. You're basically telling God, what you've provided for me is not enough. The lifestyle I want to have, kind of car I want to drive, the house I want to live in requires that I spend more money than we make. And we would see that as sinful, and we would look to repent of that and begin to make some changes to live within our means. But I would argue that a gospel-centered person who really gets that this is not our home, that even living at your means is potentially sinful. In other words, is there a desire to say, we acknowledge what we're taking in, and I don't want to just consume all that. I want to press it out for the work of the gospel and the work of the kingdom. I want to be giving to such a level that how I live and consume is a lesser margin because of the conviction to give generously and joyfully. And so I would argue, beyond just that bare minimum you're giving to the church, how is that growing and being more generous? But who else are you supporting? And how is what God's giving you advancing the gospel in kingdom ways beyond just filling your belly every year, paying your mortgage, and giving you a lifestyle that you desire? Another practice I encourage couples to consider having is gospel gifts, meaning you set aside a little bit of money that's always available to help someone when they're in need. And the point of this is if someone comes and knocks on your door, let's say an unbelieving neighbor, and they're in a real, truly hard pinch, and say, I really have this need, could you help? You're able to say, we would love to help in the name of Jesus. We want to be a blessing to you. If you've not set aside a little something to be able to do that, and you say, I'm sorry, we've spent all of our money this month, I can't help, and that unbelieving neighbor has got to go to the other unbelieving neighbor to get that help, we've missed that gospel opportunity to be a light in this dark world. So I encourage couples to consider, even if it's just 10, 20 bucks a month, setting aside, throwing it in the jar, it's there and ready. Hey, Uncle Tom has this need, or Susie down the street, or I ran into this person, I genuinely feel like this is real. How about we step up and bless them? Yeah, okay, we've budgeted the money to do that. So those are three categories of giving that I would encourage you to start there before you get to spending it on yourself. The next layer you'll see there is savings. Good budgeting requires that you save. If you get to spending and you treat savings as an optional thing for later, you will get in trouble because things will happen. You'll break a leg and $70,000 later, or the engine, the top head on the engine will go bad and $2,000 later, or you'll never vacation because we're spending our money monthly. We're never saving to actually go on the vacation. Or because you're not saving, you're still going on the vacation, but because you didn't save for it, you're just tossing it on the plastic and hoping that somehow later you'll be able to pay it off. Are you saving? And so in saving, there's three categories we encourage you to consider. Number one is basic savings. That's the typical emergency savings. You should be building up a little bit of that just backup. When something's a little more in a given month, when that thing goes bad, okay, we've set aside money, we have it in the savings account, we'll cover it. The reason why I encourage you to peel off of that and have two other kinds of savings accounts is because if you decide the sale is finally good enough to buy the new sofa set and the cat's already put the 85th hole in the current sofa set we have, we need the new one, and man, the sale is so good, let's drain the savings account and go buy it. Now what happens 3 days later when little Timmy breaks his arm and we got to pay for our copay that's a couple grand? So you need to separate the two. Have the backbone savings that's always there, the basic savings, but start another account where you're slowly setting something aside for, what's the next one on there? long-term savings. Long-term savings, you should have some kind of investment for the long-term measure and some kind of maybe out-of-the-way investment. And this is where professionals can come in and help you do this. But are you saving for down the road? Is there some kind of long-term portfolio that you're working on retirement? Is there something that goes to that? That's a separate savings venture. The third one is that specialized savings. And this is where you're sitting as a couple and you're making the wish list. What's at the top of our wish list right now? Well, we're due for the vacation. That's front line. Maybe number two is the new sofa set. We're saving for the car. We're about a year and a half out of needing to get the new car. So we're savings for that. That's the specialized. You're setting aside money to be able to spend money you have on purchases you make. And not being guilty of making purchases and then hoping later you're going to be able to pay it off somehow. There's three categories of savings. You either got to ledger them separately within the one savings account or open up a couple of different savings accounts and figure out how to set that aside. You got to talk about how you're going to prioritize what that's going for, and you got to agree on that. Those are family decisions that you're talking and praying that through. Thirdly, we're still not even spending our money yet. If you come at this practice and you're sitting in real debt, you need to get your debt paid off, because if not, you're paying thousands of dollars to someone else to pay for something you've already bought and enjoyed back here. I would argue you have no business buying new things if you still owe someone for something you've bought back here. There's a character issue there that needs to be really thought through and dealt with. And people who struggle with debt often are in that place. And I've sat in counsel with a lot of folks who struggle here. I'm really feeling left out that I don't get to get that thing that my friend just got. And to help them understand, that's because the ring you're wearing, you decided to buy back here and you're still paying for it. You don't have money to go buy something new. You're still paying for that. And the interest rates that we pay in debt is so outrageous. I mean, if you really do the math over a 5, 10, 15 year period, sometimes longer on some of the debt that you carry, I mean, you're talking life change money. You're talking $50,000, $60,000, $80,000 over a period of time that you will have paid to creditors because you did not create a discipline to pay down that debt. Can you use credit cards? Yeah, they're convenient, but we should be living within our means. So whenever I'm using a credit card, I am paying it off that month. And if you're not able to have a discipline where that's happening and you're able to manage it, then you probably shouldn't have credit cards. Discipline of how to go and attack debt and work that out is, there's a lot of helpful tools out there. One of the great classes, resources that's been made in the last 5-10 years is the work of Dave Ramsey through his financial peace teaching. We've had a lot of people who have gone through that, and it's been a huge investment. It has been phenomenal to watch families really get after stewarding their lives differently. And to see the fruit of that. One of my favorite testimonies is even here in the room, Scott and Blanca, just growing in Christ 5-6 years ago, really felt a conviction to really get their finances in order and really buckled down to apply budgeting. And in that 1 year, they paid off $22,000 in debt and became debt-free. And in the same year, was able to allow Blanca to stop working and be at home with their growing family. How do you do that? You cut your income in half and pay off your debt. The point is, it's doable with the right disciplines. And they didn't go through financial peace, but we had a lot of other families who did go through this to benefit in very similar ways. I want to show you a quick promo video for this. We're going to be offering this class in just 4 weeks here at Olive Drive on February 21st. Check this out real quick. It might be something worth investing in.
Of God started handling money God's ways. You work too hard. hard to get to the end of your life and have nothing to show for it.
This is my family's legacy that I'm talking about here. I've got to have a plan and be focused.
That knowledge that you pass down to your kids, that is how you change a family tree.
You change your life when you get sick and tired of being sick and tired. And you have that moment where you say, I've had it. I am not going to live like this anymore.
It's a real low-key class, like it's kind of boring. No, it's really great, and we already have a bunch of couples signing up for it, individuals signing up for it. So it's we're going to do it at 9 a.m. on Sunday morning during our first service. So maybe you can, you know, still get to church service the other day. But so February 21st, that's coming up, and we're kicking that off. It is, for all the materials and the books and what comes with it that they require, it is a $100 purchase for the, 15-week course?
Nine-week
course. But kind of the promise in that is applying what's learned is you'll by far, in a way, make that an investment that benefits it. We don't make any profit on that. It's just to go to cover all the things, allow them to continue to put out these great resources. The other thing that they factor in with that is if you're not willing to really invest and get serious about it and not invest in the class, then you're probably not really seriously ready to make the changes that are going to come with what they teach you. So anyway, something definitely to consider. You can talk to Marilyn afterwards. If you're interested in signing up, let us know. We'd love to get you involved in that coming up too. Are you paying off your debt? Credit card number one, credit card number two. Pay off your debt that has the biggest interest rate. The temptation is always to pay off the debt that has the smallest number so that it's out of the way. But in the meantime, you're paying the biggest dollars out to the credit card that has the fattest number on it. You got to pay that off first. Loans. Sometimes it's worth it to look into loan consolidation. How are you making it a priority to seriously pay off your debt? The reason why that still goes before your spending is for sometimes what we need to do to really get our debt behind us, before we consider the lifestyle that we're able to afford, we have to really get serious about giving, savings, and paying our debt off. And then with what's left is the season of what I have available that dictates the kind of house we live in, the kind of cars we drive, how much money we spend in eating out or buying clothes or these other things that we do. The things that we enjoy. Next is home. Many of the following areas you'll need to prayerfully consider how they help you live more for God than self. The kind of house you're living in, mortgage, rent. Are you budgeting for your electricity? Are you budgeting for your gas, for your water, for your yard maintenance, your pool, your gardener, sprinklers, lawn care, whether you're doing that yourself or someone else? Are you budgeting for those expenses? Setting aside, figuring out what those averages are. House maintenance, the carpets need to be cleaned, the plumbing needs to be addressed, there's costs that come with that. Are you budgeting for those costs or surprised by them? If you don't budget for things that come up, what you have to do then is one of two things. Spend money out of another category, robbing Paul to pay Mary, or you end up having to put it on plastic and then increase the debt measure again. So we're trying to foresee the things that happen in life and budget well for them. Household items. A lot of times what you'll do is buy your household items in your grocery budget. Here's the problem. On that one month that you just happen to run out of toilet paper, paper towels, Windex, light bulbs, all in the same month, and honey, can you get all that when you go shopping today? Okay. And you're on a budget to spend $200 and all that costs 90 and you come home with top ramen and macaroni and cheese. Why? Well, because I had to buy all that other stuff. So I encourage you to consider separating that, at least in your budget. What is the rotation of what those things cost you so that your grocery budget gets to stay fluid and not be impacted by that? So household items, cleaners, papers, scraps, those kinds of things. Soaps. Auto. Car number one, car number two, the pro-con of buying or leasing or owning. If you own, then your auto maintenance category has to be a lot bigger because you're typically driving a car that's getting older. Its maintenance costs are higher. If you lease, then that number is lower, but you got a little more money into the payment. So you got to think through what those pros-cons are. gasoline? Are you budgeting your gasoline? A lot of families, and I sit with them to work on this stuff, they've got no concept of what they pay monthly. They just drive everywhere they need or want to go. When you really start budgeting, you may have to really start considering how flippantly you just drive everywhere and change some of the schedule, because gasoline costs some real money. And how is that happening? And how are we consolidating that and being on a budget and tracking that month in, month out? Insurance, have you price shopped that lately for better prices? Sometimes that's a worthwhile work to see if you can get some better cost in your insurance. Annual fees, that's a hit. You got a couple automobiles and all of a sudden those annual fees kick in, and in that given month you just feel the big hit because you haven't saved for it. So hey, where's the $350 coming from for annual renewals and smog checks? Oh man, we're really hurting this month. Well, let's throw it on the card. So what we recommend is figure out what those totals are and then divide by 12 and set aside in your monthly budget that little amount into an account. You got a little ledger for it. Hey, we just got that renewal. Great, here it is. It's right here. We've been setting it aside. Write the check. We got the money. $10 a month, 12, $15 a month goes into that category. Auto maintenance. Man, this is a biggie that a lot of times people will neglect. You know, you need new tires in your car. That can be $600, $800, $1,200. You budgeting for that? Oil changes. Hey, that 5,000 mile thing's coming. Are we budgeting for that? Are you just hoping that that 15-year-old car doesn't break down and that big expense is not coming? No, are you budgeting for it? That's a big category. I encourage a lot of people to consider $150, $200 a month into an auto maintenance account so that when that $1,800 bill comes, you're not going into debt. You have set aside the money to pay for it. And you start to think about these numbers, you're like, where's that money? So then that comes back to these other bigger questions of, are we really able to afford the house we live in? Are we really able to drive that truck that costs twice the amount of gas? Its tires are twice the amount of money. I know you love it, but I mean, you got to really start to do some real business. Am I living within my means? We're making those decisions as a family. Communications, media, internet, what are you paying for that? Have you price shopped it lately? It's a category a lot of times you're paying for huge rate. What's the name for the rate on your, what's the measurement there? Help me out. Yeah, whatever your megabytes you're paying for, whatever that is. Sometimes you're paying for way more than you really need to, like, look on Google. You know, you're paying like $30 more a month when you only need like 12, and you're paying for 850, you know, like something crazy. So have you price shopped that lately? Your phone, do you need a home phone? What does that cost? Your cell phone plan. Probably twice a year I call AT&T and I look at what I'm spending and I think through how that's working. Why? Because I don't want to keep giving them more of my money than I need to give. Wow, we only use half our data plan. Hey, let's knock that back. Because I'd rather spend my money on other stuff than making you richer. You know, and making those adjustments and recognizing the luxuries. Do I need a unlimited data plan to be on Facebook all day? Well, not if we have $10 for groceries, I don't. You know, maybe some of those luxuries need to change or be managed. Satellite cable. I'll tell you, when money is tight, that should be one of the first categories you kick out. You know, so much stuff you can watch online for free. And at the end of the day, you don't have to have it. You don't have to have Planet World, you know, to survive. Whatever, I don't even know if that's a station. Yeah. Planet World, that's the same word twice, right? Are you willing to pull that back? You know, we've been careful to get into big contracts in that area because it's been something Jennifer and I have had to just ditch and go for half years or even full years just without it. And it's good for our family. Health, are you budgeting your premiums, your deductibles, your co-pays, your gym fees, your supplements you're taking? Is there a budget there? Are you even addressing that area of life? Lifestyle, what is your grocery budget? Have you ever really thought through where you shop for your groceries, how you buy that? A lot of extra money gets spent on premium items or in certain stores over others. A lot of money can be saved by doing a little bit of work with couponing and some of those things. Are you adding that into the discipline, the lifestyle? Dining out. You know, a lot of us just love eating out, and it's convenient and it's quick. And at the end of the day, maybe it's something where you're at the end of the day being a little more lazy than you can afford to be, because dining out can be expensive. If it's not expensive, then you're probably eating a lot of food that you shouldn't be constantly eating, because dollar menu constant eating is just going to kill you early. You know, so how are you budgeting for your dining out, and you're accountable to it? His spending, her spending, this is coming back to that thing where if you don't set this aside, then you never have anything. So I actually encourage couples that you need to set aside an amount that you both have that's yours to decide on how you spend it, as long as you're honoring God and your spouse. So, you know, you're not feeding a gambling addiction. But guys, if she wants to take her spending and kind of save it up to go get her nails done because that's something she really likes, and you just totally don't get that cost her $30, it's hers to decide. That's her spending money. And gals, if he wants to, like, go back and rebuild his garbage pail collection, you know, those little collector cards when we were kids, like, I don't know, whatever you're into, that's like just makes your RC car, like that's your little thing, and you're not spending family money on it, but you're being willing to have a discipline to save your little bit of spending money and have that hobby, again, as long as it's not dishonoring, then that's yours to save up and do. And it can be a fun thing to, that's sometimes what you use to buy each other gifts that's not in the regular budget or to save up for something. It's funny, there's times where one of us will have a discipline of not spending our spending money, so we've got a little bit of a buildup, and the other person's sitting there kind of jealous because they're like, dude, I just spent all my spending money, and I see in your account that's like, yeah, wow. You want to share some of that with me? But you need that. You need to be able to have that thing that's just not connected, and you're like, hey, that's my thing, you know, that I'm putting parts on the motorcycle or whatever. I'm not tapping the family budget for that. That's kind of like over here on the side. So that's an important area to be budgeting, and you get that in your account or in cash every month to put in your wallet, and then you get to save it or spend it as you like. Family outings, are you budgeting for those? Are you doing those? Kids allowance, are you teaching them the principle of giving? I've never taken a course on how to do all this. I'm blessed to have been taught when I was 8 how to budget my money. We were given an allowance. We were given envelopes. One of them said tithe. One of them said clothing. My parents purposefully stopped buying a couple items that we needed to teach us that we had to save for those. So if I decided to spend all my money on Street Fighter 2 and the arcade, and I wasn't saving for my next pair of tennis shoes, then I had to go that next 6 months with my ratty old tennis shoes. They were trying to teach us the discipline of you have to manage that money well or you end up going without. Taught us how to give to God first and foremost. Taught us how to save. We had a savings envelope. And so is that discipline something you're teaching your kids? Use their allowance to be formative in their lives at a young age and grow them as you're discipling them is an important thing to do. Clothing, are you budgeting for that, or do you just go shopping when you want to? Your gifts, maybe you don't get to go to all 5 birthdays this month. Why? Because we don't have the money to buy 5 gifts. We have to be good stewards of what God's given us. Taxes, are you saving for taxes so you're not hit hard at the end of the year? Education, and maybe some other categories that you have that aren't included. The principle is to get in your monthly budget to 0, track your spending, sit together at least on a monthly basis, and look over your budget. Be accountable to it together. I believe that one of you can be the main bill payer manager of this. You both don't have to sit there and do that together. But don't let one of you do this without the other person being checked in on it. You both have to at least once a month take that time, look at the numbers, both be accountable to it. I've seen marriages really go through some hard times when the one person's managing it and the other person 6 months later goes, what do you mean we're $3,000 in debt? No, seriously. And they're like, dude, I'm doing the best, but you said we needed to buy that when that came up and buy that. And you're like, you should have told me. And then couples are like wrecked out. So you can't afford to do that. The purpose of showing you this is that together in your oneness, you're deciding, you're prayerfully going at these things, coming up with a plan, and you're being accountable to it and being a good steward of your money. This is to help you avoid the arguments and the fights. You're agreeing ahead of time. This is how we're going to be disciplined to carrying the weight and doing this. Huge area in our marriages. I encourage the class. I'm willing to answer a couple practical questions related to this after if you have those. I pray you'll get after this, use this as a help, create a ledger, create the discipline, and do that. Let's look at a couple other areas in this session. Relationships. How are you stewarding your marriage? You're stewarding it well by giving up this Friday and Saturday night. We designed this so we're going to be out of here at 12:30. You're going to have the rest of your Saturday. I'm thankful for your investment, but how else are you investing in your marriage? What other books are you reading? Check out the books before you go. We're not, you know, looking to do that to make a big dollar. We're just looking to provide you with good resources that we've vetted for your good. How are you getting away together? Do you have a date night? Do you have a daily one-on-one time? Let's talk about date night for a second. Some of you are going, man, we have the kids. How do we do that? We can't afford to pay the babysitter and to go out. Maybe you get creative. You get another family that you love and trust, and you swap date nights. You get three couples in it. So you're going on two dates, and then on the third week, you're the family watching the kids. So now all the kids are being covered. You're there with people you trust, and you're getting that regular date night. It's creative ways to be able to do this. Guys, you hopefully did a good job romancing your bride as you were winning her over. And if you're like many, the whole concept of buying flowers or wooing her or getting dressed up and going out for a date fell off the map when you put a ring on her finger. We need to do that. We need to stir that romance. We need to look in each other's eyes. We need to go out and do fun stuff together. It's an important thing. The most important relationship in your kids' life next to their relationship with God is your relationship together. When a husband and wife are strong and yoked and growing and intimate, what that means for your family is game-changing compared to like father-son time, mother-daughter. You need to make it a priority. Your kids need to see you in love. They need to see you getting dressed up. They need to be jealous for your time too, and that's a good thing that mommy and daddy are getting that time together, and you're teaching them the value of that. Daily one-on-one time together. Are you in the business of your schedules figuring out where to get some of that time together daily, or at least the majority of your days? Talked to couples over the years where they've developed the bad practice of letting the kids stay up late. There's never a time in the day where just mommy and daddy get to have mommy and daddy time. I would say even if you have older kids, they still need to have a time or an hour where they go to their room and they're done for the night. So you can clock out from being parents and you can clock into being a couple. And get creative with that. We'll talk more about that in our last session, but learn how to use music in your room or turn the TV up or use fans in the kids' room. Hey, we're going to have noise canceling. Whatever it takes to just to unplug. Because, no, the reality is that I counsel with families like, no, we don't even know what that is. We have to go away for the weekend. I'm going, no, that's not enough. And I'm not talking just being sexual. I'm talking about just, you know, not constantly mommy, daddy, but you just get that time together. To be together, to read, to grow, to study, enjoy a glass of wine, talk, whatever that is. Are you figuring out a way to have that? And just whatever it takes to press for that, get creative for that. Maybe that's lunch together. Maybe that's the way you do your mornings. You're waking up a little before them. So are you investing into the marriage? Let's talk about friendships. Do you like the close friends your spouse has? Don't say out loud. I want you to get in trouble. You need to. Why? Because those friendships impact who you are now. You're not just an individual. So you hang out with Big Larry, and Big Larry's got a foul mouth, and he talks down on women, and it kind of affects the way you are. As an individual, that might have been one thing, but being married to your spouse, that impacts the kind of man you are. Ladies, maybe Susie over here is just a gossip, and it's pulling you into things that are unhealthy. It's affecting your character and your testimony in Christ. We have to be willing to have some serious dialogue about who our influencer friendships are. Now, I mean influencer in this way. You have those friendships that you're close. You let them speak into your life. You share intimate things. Those are relationships that will have influence on you. Then you'll have other friendships that are a little more distant, and you are the influencer. You're not the influencee because of kind of the measure of the closeness of it. Maybe there can be a little more risk in that kind of relationship as far as the temperament of how the time's spent. But I believe you need to bless each other and really be kind of blessed and encouraged that these are the guys or the gals I'm spending time with, and that you see that it's helping you mature in the Lord. It is a blessing. And we actually counsel, and then I'll ask you this question. Do you have regular guy time, girl time? Meaning, man, you are providing and encouraging a time of the week where she's going out without the kids, without responsibilities, to just go be with her girlfriends or to unplug and be a woman with other women. And same for the guys. Gals, are you providing and encouraging a time where he is unplugging from the family to go get with his other male friends? That is a good practice. A lot of couples don't go through. You got married, became best friends, and really, for the most part, you're just with each other all the time. As great as that is, I will argue in a lot of years of doing this that good guy time, girl time is healthier for your marriage. Why? Because it makes you miss the nest. There's something about wanting to come home and getting away. There's also something about guys, you having godly men in your life to influence you and encourage you and build you up in a way that if you're only always with your wife, you don't get that. You're not growing in that area. You're not getting to scratch that itch of some of that male time that is good for us. It's innate in us. And same thing for the gals. And so are you scheduling, as you look at your time schedule together, are you saying, honey, you're overdue. Hey, go get a night. We're going to go out with the guys. We're going to get into that Bible study where those guys are going to be digging in. Hey, you're providing that for her to have that too. You need that. It is so good for your marriage. And when you don't do it, you're missing a key component there. Are you fostering those relationships? Are you aware of who those friendships are? Let's talk about our kids. Again, the most important relationship in your kids' lives next to their relationship with the Lord is your relationship. Because when they can break into mommy and daddy and get you at each other and see that broken down, the whole construct of how God intended for kids to be raised by a mother and a father is broken. So are you investing into the marriage? And then next, how are you getting investment time with your kids? Is there a daily time where you're digging into the Word? Men, are you spiritually leading your family? Or because you're working and she's at home, you're kind of leaving that up to her? What does it look like to open the Bibles at breakfast time or have that evening? But while dinner is getting made, you all come to the table a little early, and men, you're leading some time with the kids. And are you getting one-on-one time with your kids throughout the month? Maybe there's a special daddy-daughter day, or you're going out to do that activity with your son, and they're getting prioritized, scheduled time to get one-on-one with you. What have you done to invest in your parenting? Have you ever taken classes or read books? Have you asked others to help you shape the way you do discipline and the way you are growing? Is that something you're both investing into? Currently at All Drive, we're offering a 16-week parenting class through the Ted Tripp material that we had Ted recently visit here with Legacy. And families are digging in and they're being challenged and they're stretching. Are you taking those steps to grow in that? Again, I don't remember the high school class we took, or here's how you be a father. Here's how you discipline your child. No, we're practicing what we saw mom and dad do, whether it was good or bad, or we're just winging it. And I'm telling you, there's such a blessing to have the church around you to be able to invest and read and grow and mature that area of how you're tending to your kids. Let's talk about skills, your work. Are you doing a job that is helping your marriage grow? This is a tough one. A lot of couples have never stopped to really consider, is my job a blessing? We've had guys who have been out of work and needing a job, and they've considered like becoming a truck driver. And I have other friends who did that, and it was a wreck on their marriages. Why? Because that guy's gone 6, 7, 8, 9 days in a row, never home, out on the road. And sometimes certain jobs are just not for family men or whatever it is that you're doing. Is the work you have, I don't care if it was your dream at 16 to go get your degree and that's the work you're going to do. You're now a family man, so what does that job mean for the health of your family? Maybe there's a serious talk about the kind of hours you work, or there's a new way you guys have got to begin to manage your week. Are you willing to have those discussions? Are you willing to seek counsel in some of those areas? Or are you just going, hey, that's the job I have, so that's the work I'm doing? And I'm going, maybe it doesn't have to be that way. Maybe there's some regrouping and considering what that is and how those time and those hours are being used. If your marriage is withering or barely holding on because of your work, that's probably because of a misprioritization of your life. The dream career is taking the lead. The lifestyle it pays for is an idol in your life. The extra hours you're working to pull those extra dollars so that fancy vacation or jet skis in the garage or whatever it is that you're into. Maybe part of that's what's got to change, because although the kids get to go out 3 times a year and go on the jet skis that we own, they don't know their dad because you're never home. So those are conversations that need to be happening and working through and praying through. And those are important things to be willing to be addressed. Who makes the money? Just because you're the income earner, I would say, doesn't mean you're not also doing chores at home. Man, we need to have a share of the home life. And what are those responsibilities that you have identified and you've agreed on and you do? You helping? If you're both working, it's also irresponsible to say, well, because you're the woman, all the home responsibilities are on you. That's back to that hierarchicalism kind of way of going at that. How are you sharing that load and loving sacrificially each other? And what are your house duties? What are your car duties, your pet duties? Family approach to getting things done. Are you investing and involving and discipling your kids in those things? There's the old illustration of raking the leaves without little 3-year-old Tommy in the yard is a lot faster. Because if he's in the yard with me while we do it, that pile probably gets dispersed 3 times before we finally get it done. Or how we put it in the can takes a lot longer. But man, sometimes that longer investment is worth it to be doing that activity with your son, even at 3. So how are you taking a family approach on some of those chores and activities? Hobbies. Do you have hobbies that you both feel good about? Just because your grandpa was a rodeo rider and just because your dad was a rodeo rider doesn't mean you have to be a rodeo rider. Your wife might hate it that you rodeo ride, but every time you get on the bull, you're going to die. You decided to become one with her. How she feels about that now matters. If you know me, you know that I love to ride motorcycles. I grew up with an aversion to motorcycles. My dad was a captain in the fire department, so I only heard stories of guys getting scraped off the road in Orange County. But when we moved here, it wasn't just street bikes and heavy traffic. There's open roads, the mountain, the coast, and a lot of guys riding Harleys. I got exposed to this whole new world. I was like, this is cool. I wasn't on my snowboard like I used to be as a younger man. I was a family man now and wanted to still scratch that itch. And I was like really interested in getting a bike and riding. But I knew Jennifer had to be 100% on board. Why? Because if I convinced her, twisted her arm, that that's going to be my new hobby and just did it anyway, what am I doing to my wife every time I'm out riding if she's just wrecked at home thinking I'm not coming home? That's not good for her. And so I know other friends who want to ride, but their wives are not in that same place. So you know what? I don't recommend that they ride. Why? Because of this. It's more important. Jennifer got to a place where she was all in, and I did training, and she's very supportive of that hobby for me. You know, we can be hurtful with that. I remember back in the day we lived in the mountains, we'd shoot guns and all that, and there's a pistol I wanted to buy. We were young, married, and I was just sold out that I had to have this. It's like the Red Ryder BB gun kind of thing. I was just like him. I was like, that is my whole life. I have to get that gun. I have to get it now. And I convinced her to rake our budget so I could go buy it. Years later, I was still paying the price for that. I hurt her and how I manipulated her to have that toy in our marriage. That was not okay. She had to forgive me. I had to really see that and apologize and change that practice. Are your hobbies life-giving to the marriage? Are there something you both agree and are invested in? Is she okay with you wrenching on the old car, even though it's taken you 18 years to restore it? No, I'm serious. We live in a city where this is a real thing. There are dads who their kids don't know them. Dad's in the garage all the time. He's around, but I don't know my dad because his real child is that car. That's his baby. It's the Ferris Bueller's Day Off moment. Do you remember that? I hate this car. He's kicking the car and they're rewinding the wheels and it launches out the back window and old classic Ferrari is done. You just see the weight come off his shoulders. Because that was dad's baby, not him. So what are those hobbies? Nothing worse in a marriage than you choosing to fulfill your time with something that's offensive or grinds or hurts what you've said you are now going to be in oneness. So that's an important area to address. Volunteerism. 1 Peter 4:10-11, each one should use whatever gift he has received to serve others faithfully, administering God's grace in its various forms. If anyone speaks, he should do it as one speaking the very words of God. If anyone serves, he should do it with the strength that God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. Each one of you are gifted with specific gifts. Are you using those gifts for the advancement of his kingdom? Are you using your time and your talents to be a blessing to others? Or is it all about you and your family? It's all about your own consumption. Ephesians 2:10 says, we are God's workmanship, created in Christ to do good works, which God prepared in advance for you to do. Do you know what your gifts are? And the question is, how are you using them for the kingdom? Are you serving? Are you involved? Are you investing into the community? Are you modeling that for your children? Jennifer and I, for years, we give a lot of ourselves to the work we do at the church and all that, but for years we longed for a way to serve as a family. And the reality is we can go to the soup kitchen an hour once a week, but then the kids come back to their plush lifestyle. We wanted to show them what it really looks like to be open-handed for the name of Christ in the short time we have. And so in praying about that, my wife had a long-time conviction for foster care. And so we got all through all the classes and by counsel of loved ones around us, decided that that was going to be our community investment ministry in our city. And so in the last year and a half, we've had about 24 kids come through our home and currently have 3 in addition to our 3. And there was a day where I thought that'd be impossible to do. And yet it is such a joy. My kids cry when they leave and are stoked when we get new ones. And love what that cost us together as a family to invest in these kids that need love and need that care and a hard time in their lives. What is that thing for you and your family? How are you using your gifts in your local church and in the community to serve and to be involved? Is that something that's a priority in your marriage that you're encouraging each other to do and to live out? And what is that to faithfully serve with your gifts? These are big areas of life, friendships and family and time management and our money and our kids and our hobbies. And we need to use the other principles of who God is and what it means to be one, to share and communicate and listen, these other things we've talked about, to navigate these areas. This is where marriage is practical on the ground and being lived out. So I pray that some of this is helpful for you to take some inventory and do some accounting and make some adjustments and see a little more round health and address some things that maybe you haven't seen lately so that oneness can really thrive in who you are practically. All right, take another quick break, use the restroom. We're gonna come back for our last session on intimacy. We'll kick it off with a fun video.